Hey everybody, and welcome to the first episode of, I guess we'll call it, Radio Free Nintendo, here from E3 2015!
Yay! Last year was better.
I'm here with most of the away team. We're missing Kim and Becky, but we'll join up with them tomorrow and try to get them on an episode tomorrow, along with a lot of other coverage. But with me, I do have, by the way, I'm Jonathan Metz. And with me, as always, is Neil Ronahan.
Hello.
And John Reardon.
Hey, everybody.
And Justin Berube.
Ice climbers are belaying back.
No, they're not.
Jared Rosenberg.
Good afternoon.
And Brian Rose.
Hello.
And Michael Cole.
Hey.
And Curtis Bond.
What's up?
Wow. So it is day zero. I guess that's what people call it. Today was the press conference day. Not much going on in the world of Nintendo.
Outside of the Nindies.
Yeah, except for some indie games, and that's I think that's how we should start it. So, as many of you will know and have maybe tried for yourself, this morning Nintendo released eight demos,
nine
demos on the eShop for Wii U. Of independent titles that are coming to that platform, and some of them also to 3DS, I guess. You can download those now during E3, and if you do, you get a discount on those games if you decide to buy them later on, which is pretty awesome. I thought that was a really fantastic initiative. And being here at the show and having other things going on today, most of us haven't played those demos yet, so we're kind of behind everybody else, but get used to it. You know, there's just a bunch of... We're going to hear about Treehouse stuff all week long. And I'll be like, what? They did what?
I mean, that's in what game? Like, I remember last year coming home and over the next 2 weeks learning about all these things and games that I played demos of and was just like, oh, I didn't know that was in that. I didn't know that was a part of that game.
Well, they often take different demos up on the stage for Treehouse Live than they actually
like
let
they
us play.
They showed off Midna and Hyrule Warriors and all only on the Treehouse stage.
Showed off Xenoblade Chronicles X last year. Cross? I guess we're calling it X here. Well, we'll find out tomorrow. But we are now just about 10 hours away, I guess, from the big Nintendo Digital event. And so we don't know what's going to happen there. I think we have a few ideas, but we can maybe talk about that a little bit towards the end of this episode. But I thought we should start off by talking about some other indie games, because we had a nice long chat with Jules Watchum and Brian something.
The dude from Image and Form.
Yes.
They made SteamWorld Dig.
Exactly. So we interviewed those guys together today, and it was really fun. And after it was over, and we have the audio from that and video. And
right, we should have we have a lot of fun video coverage of that interview. That'll probably go up after E3, but it seems like the early reports from our crack video team of John, Jared, and Kurt that interview with Brian and Jules is going to come out and be really cool.
Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun to do. And we got to play some of their demos afterwards. So I thought let's start off with some 3DS impressions since we're at E3. These are games that are not available for people at home to try. And I think for most of us, it was the first time we'd played them. So anybody who played one of those demos, jump out. I mean, how about SteamWorld Heist?
That game looks awesome. I'd seen videos for it before, but this is the first time I got to play it, and it was actually, I think we were the first press to play the 3DS version, apparently. And the 3DS version looks really great.
It
played well.
Stereoscopic 3D is basically just parallax stuff, but that looks really nice.
Well, the art style of SteamWorld Heist is really pops.
Really big ass sprites.
I guess they're sprites, but they're... I mean, they're just artwork. I mean, and they're really smoothly animated, it pops with characters. Really looks good.
The backgrounds are very detailed, and that's where the 3D really comes into play. Those backgrounds just look fantastic, and I looked at that game for 2 seconds and said, "Whoa, this doesn't look like SteamWorld Dig or anything else." The art style is really impressive. From talking to Brian, he told us that the game takes place hundreds of years in the future after SteamWorld Dig, and it ties into the way that game ended. If you think about the environment that you were in for the end of that game and the final boss and some of the weird, mysterious stuff going on around there. They're going to explain some of that and follow up on some of that in Heist. And but it plays differently. It's a turn-based 2D strategy game, and he compared it a little bit to Worms, and I could...
I think we did, actually. Oh, we did. I think I did.
Oh, okay.
More specifically. I think he was saying it was inspired a lot by XCOM.
Yeah, yeah. I could see both of those comparisons from what I played. I liked how, as you're moving these characters around, it shows you, you know, how far they can move, and you know, basically, it's very visual like XCOM, in that it shows you very easily where your range of movement is. And then when you choose to use a weapon, you get this, you know, this, well, some of the weapons have laser sights and some don't.
Right. But so sometimes you got to kind of eyeball it. And maybe it's like, I think there was like a shotgun type thing. So you don't have to be perfect to do damage, but you can't be like precise. Like, the other guy was kind of like a sniper. You could go really far off.
You could also bounce. Using the laser sight, you could bounce bullets off of walls and make them ricochet around and hit, and like really accurately hit a guy who was like behind something else. So I didn't get to play a ton of it, but it sure seemed really cool, actually. Yeah. There's cover and there's different interactions, and you can move with the circle pad, you can move the camera all over the place. I mean, it looks like a 2D side-scrolling platform game, but... It's you don't move that far per turn, so it's much more about getting in position and staying away from explosive things.
It's very weird. It's a grid-based combat system, but you don't see the grid. It's like they've removed one of the dimensions on the grid. It's a line, basically.
Yeah,
and but it's cool. I think it really works well, and I haven't played a game like that before.
Mm-hmm. The music sounded great. The artwork, I mean, really, I've never seen anything that looks like it. I was so impressed by the visual style of it. And I think after SteamWorld Dig, those guys have a lot of credit built up with with fans. And that, I'm really excited. So that's coming out in the fall.
On 3DS and Wii U.
Yeah. And the style of it, the story, to me, looked a lot like Firefly.
I totally get that, especially because it is like you're in a spaceship and it seems like you're like looting other ships or something. You're cowboys in space.
Yes,
cowbots.
You're cowboy robots in space, and they all talk and they have hilarious names.
Seabrass.
Seabrass. Yes,
I like that one.
Yep. Sally. There was a robot named Sally who I hired. I spent water to hire her, and she became like a sidekick and. Yeah, it's the style of it is really something, and it was fun to play from what I saw. I mean, it's not a platformer at all. It's not an action game.
No.
But if you like XCOM, if you like Codename Steam, if you like Worms, if you like Valkyria Chronicles, I mean, it's a 2D sort of side-scrolling version of those, and looked really cool. This is a James Jones game, for sure.
I'll be curious to see how they're able to make it more complicated. You know, in the later levels, in terms of strategy, layout of the maps, because you think, well, can you do enough in this? But it's really just 2D. It's like, how complicated can this get?
Right. I was talking with him a bit, and it seemed like the enemies were going to start getting mixed up, or their weak spots would be in different places. Because in the demo with the levels I played, all their weak spots were their head.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, some enemies aren't going to have that weak spot, so you're going to have to really learn how to play the game differently with different situations. And a big part of the game is the escape. And in those first few levels, it was pretty straightforward. Once you get the loot, the exit's not far away. But he was also explaining to me how it's going to get more difficult in certain levels. There's going to be more put in the way. Maybe your escape will be harder than getting the loot. So
there were Wario Land Shake It levels based on that, right?
Yeah.
Where the escape was most of the level.
I brought that up. I said, this kind of reminds me of the Wario Land series, where it's like, you get there, and then you got to get out. So.
Right.
God, what a good game.
Yeah, it's cool. we saw a little bit of Dementium Remastered. I don't think any of us played that much of it. It looked good to me. It looked a lot better than Moon Chronicles on 3DS. It looked much more like a 3DS game rather than a DS game.
I just died in it. You say, here, till we go over to you. Like, yeah. Ah, I don't know what's up.
Oh. Sorry. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be a hard game, but pretty much all Renegade Kids stuff is pretty hard. But I think Dementium is pretty far up there. But it's a horror game. It's an M-rated horror game coming out for 3DS. And then I don't know if I believe this or not, but Jules told us that he thought it might come out in around September. And then he thought Dementium 2 would come out by Halloween a month later.
Which, given their track record, I don't know if I'd buy that.
Yeah.
That'd be really cool.
Two of them if they want to try.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, man. Those guys always have so many games all the time. Like, always. Pretty amazing.
It's kind of like the great thing and the bad thing about kind of Jules and Renegade Kid is that they are very open with their fans, which is why stuff like Treasure Knots, which was another game. I mean, it's the same demo that's been circulating for the past 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. But cool. Jules also had that game with him, and that's a game that he admitted when we were talking to him, they announced a little too early. But that's part of how he kind of operates is he's mm-hmm. really open, and now that they went indie, he's very open with the fans. And I think that, for the most, I think that's the best way to go, but then it does kind of butt you in the ass a little bit when stuff like Treasure Knots gets announced, and then it undergoes all these kind of renovations and keeps on getting pushed back.
Yeah, it was the first time I'd played the Treasure Knots demo, and even though it was, I guess, an old demo, to me it felt really fresh and fun and interesting. And like I told Jules, like, after 5 seconds, I said, "Oh, this feels great."
Yep.
Like you, the first time you jump and attack and you move around, immediately it feels really smooth and tight, and the characters feel like they can do a lot, and the three different kinds of weapons feel really different. And the levels were just fun to jump around on. And it's like, I don't know why I'm doing this stuff. I don't know where to go or really what I'm supposed to be collecting or anything like that. But it felt right off the bat. And that made me excited for that game to finally come out in 2016, I guess. But the main thing that we saw was Mutant Mud's Super Challenge. And we played the 3DS version. I didn't touch it, so somebody who did should talk about
it. What he had with him. I mean, there's the demo on the Wii U, which is, I think it's got the first level of the first world, the first level of the third world, and the boss from, I think, the third world. But what we got to play everything that they have of the game right now.
Oh.
Which is everything except for, because I guess there's 5 worlds and then, you know, 5 bosses in each world, and the boss that's in the Wii demo is playable. But I know I played like I think one of the ones in the ice world, which I think was like world 2, but then I went to world 5 and figured, well, if I have this opportunity, I'm gonna go see the final level of the game, and yeah that game's gonna be real hard. Gonna be real hard.
It says it in the name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was, you know, more Mutant Muds, which is, you know, not a problem to me at all.
Did it feel different in any particular way?
You know, not really. I mean, it felt like there was more going on in some of the levels, but yeah, there was definitely a challenge. The challenge was definitely ramped up a lot. Kind of more akin to, let's say, Super Mario Brothers: The Lost Levels. But I feel like this is more enjoyable than that game.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's not like hard to the point of ridiculousness like the Lost Levels kind of got. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of it's kind of on the same level of challenge as a lot of the hard stages in Mutant Muds, especially like the bonus ones that you unlock.
Yeah.
And the one difference it seems to be, like, what's in that game as opposed to what, you know, what's in that game that wasn't in the original, is that there's a lot more kind of nooks and crannies. Like in the demo that you can play on your Wii U right now, in some of those stages you can kind of like, you'll see a glint of one of those jewels like hidden in a wall, and then there's secret passages and walls. There's also like breakable blocks that hold things, and you can also collect CDs in all the levels that then unlock music tracks in a jukebox.
Alright, so that was what we played today. Not that much,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we had
E3
other...
E3 hasn't even started.
Exactly. We had other business to take care of, too. We you know, we got our badges, and we picked up some supplies and whatnot. But also, we watched the Microsoft and Sony press conferences, and I wanted to get pretty quick thoughts from you guys. Maybe some of you guys over here who haven't talked much yet. what you guys thought, and if it changed your outlook on what you're expecting from Nintendo or what you think they should do.
Jared, talk about Shenmue.
I'll bring up Shenmue quickly. So, Shenmue's a game Shenmue the original on Dreamcast, and Shenmue 2 appeared on Dreamcast and Xbox. But those were games I loved, released almost 15 years ago. Shenmue 2, not going to spoil anything, but does end on the most ridiculous cliffhanger. And 14 years later, we learned there is now a Kickstarter. They've already raised over $1 million.
Oh, I think it might have been the fastest to $1 million in the gaming space.
But yeah, I'm super excited. It's nice. We're finally going to see the end of this crazy adventure that was started in Shenmue.
Is it the Japanese Twin Peaks?
I think it totally is.
It's got a little bit of the Twin Peaks flavor. There's definitely some weird stuff. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's Lynchian, but
no, I guess Deadly Premonition is a much better example of that. But especially with the cliffhanger and waiting a really long time.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. No. You're right. I the fact that Twin Peaks is now coming back. That is.
Imagine it's like they come out in the same month. Shenmue 3,
they could?
Twin Peaks.
Probably, Shenmue's probably pretty far away.
Yeah,
they said December 2017.
Ooh, 17.
Yikes.
Wow. Well, at least they're being honest about it.
Is anyone else kind of grossed out by Kickstarters being announced on a Sony press conference stage?
Yeah. I think
it's a weird thing.
Like, because I think that it, and we were kind of talking about it, I don't know for sure, and this will probably come to light as this Kickstarter goes through. I think that Yu Suzuki owns the rights to Shenmue somehow, so Sega's not really involved, and that makes it a little less gross.
Yeah.
But still, the fact that Sony's like, "Oh yeah, we'll give you screen time, but we're not going to fund your game," like that's the weird part to me.
I think it's probably something he would have launched during or maybe right after E3 anyway, and maybe he approached Sony and said, "Hey, I can make a lot more money on this Kickstarter, and we can make a better game if I get the attention of you announcing it during your big thing." And so maybe it was his idea or something, but I mean, it's not, the game isn't necessarily all that linked to Sony, I suppose. That's just the avenue through which it was announced.
Well, isn't it only planned to come out on PlayStation 4 and PC?
Yep.
Yeah, those are the two.
So,
okay.
It's kind of weird to think about that all three games were on different just different company systems.
It is weird.
Yeah.
Sega and then Microsoft.
Sega, Microsoft, now Sony.
Yeah, that is weird. What about Microsoft? This morning, you know, it's a little, Sony kind of like flushed out a lot of whatever I had in my head about Microsoft because they just had so many crazy, crazy announcements. But I thought this morning Microsoft did a really nice job. It was like a really convincing, thorough dismantling of whatever you might not like about Xbox or whatever concerns you might have about buying one, in my opinion. Well, I don't know. What do you guys
think? I think you put the nail on the head. Like, I was so adamantly against getting an Xbox One ever since they first unveiled, you know, their plans for, like, DRM and used games and just gross little spying things with, like, the Kinect and things like that. Yeah. It's just like, I don't think I'll ever buy an Xbox One, but this press conference definitely turned things around for me, and I think one of the biggest things was the Rareware collection.
Yeah.
For me, that was great. one of the tipping points for me, just definitely wanting to get an Xbox One.
I saw that thing and I said, so many Nintendo fans are going to buy an Xbox just to get the Rare stuff because, I mean, at least half of the games in that collection are for Nintendo platforms and they've never really been available after the initial platforms, you know, and including like RC Pro-Am is easily one of the best NES games, in my opinion. And they've never sold it on anything else since then. There was a Super RC Pro-Am, which I don't know if it's
any good. I think there's RC Pro-Am, too.
There is that. That's on NES. I think there's also a Super, isn't there?
I think there might be. And I know there's one on Game Boy as well, I think.
Well, I don't know if all those are in this package. But
no, probably not. Just the first one.
To me, it's a great announcement. I'm a little worried that emulation might not be up to snuff. That would be the deal breaker there. Right. I mean,
that's the big question because the games we know are good.
Yeah.
It's the question of, do they hold up? Are they presented nicely? Do they run perfectly?
$30 for all that. You have to wonder, well, how much polish are they putting on this if they're selling it for $30? Is this a lost leader to get people to buy the system?
Sure it is.
I guess. I
mean, to me, that's exactly what it is. Yeah. And like I said, I mean, this is like, hey, if you don't think you care about Xbox games, here's 30 reasons that you're wrong. You know?
Yeah.
It's totally, to me, it's totally a loss leader. It's a get your foot in the door type of package.
Mm-hmm.
They should have done it 10 years ago, but I'm so glad they're doing it finally. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, that was the one thing that got to me. I mean, I've never had an Xbox One. I never saw the appeal of getting one, but after that, I was interested. That and backwards compatibility.
Oh, yeah, backwards is, that's awesome.
Some pretty big news. I mean, they kind of oversold it during the press conference because they were saying, oh, all games are going to be backwards compatible. Then we kind of realized that, oh, it's just going to be games that companies opt in to be backwards compatible.
I don't think it's opt in. I think they're doing it the way they did with 360, where it's done in software. They're going to basically work on the emulator or whatever code it is that makes that stuff run, and they'll figure out what's compatible with it, and then that list will grow as they continue to tweak it. And as they find games that are compatible with it, they'll go to the publisher of that game and say, hey, do you want us to do this? Turn it on? Yes or no? Okay. If yes, there you go. And, you know, like they were saying, if you own the game digitally on 360, which, like, for instance, all the XBLA stuff, you could easily, but they eventually did sell a bunch of retail games as well. If you own that stuff on 360, it'll just, once they enable it, it'll just show up in your library and you could just start playing it. And, I mean, I bought a ton of Xbox Live Arcade games, so if they start converting all that stuff, it'd be nice. I could buy an Xbox and just turn it on day one.
Geometry Wars 1 is supposed to be one of the first ones.
Sure, there you go. And I saw Viva Pinata as well, although that's also going to be in the Rare
collection. A lot of the Rare games are going to be a part of it.
Sure.
Can I go back to the Rare collection for a second?
Oh, yeah.
To tie it into Nintendo, like, they're giving you 30 games, basically a dollar a game. When you compare that to the Virtual Console, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even look at Mega Man Legacy Collection. That would be twice the price on Virtual Console to get those six games.
Yeah, it would. Mm. So, I've been saying it for years, but Nintendo really needs to redo their price structure on those games, because not every game on NES is worth $4.99 or whatever they charge these days.
Sure.
Yeah, there are some games that are worth that price, but there are some games that are just like, why are you charging $8 for Pack Attack?
I'd like to think that tomorrow morning would be a perfect time for Nintendo to address Virtual Console in some kind of structural way, not just here's a new game for it, which they did yesterday with Earthbound, right, which is awesome, but more structurally, like, we're going to approach Virtual Console in a different way going forward that is a little more appealing and, you know, and makes more sense to people. It's a little, I don't know, but, you know, given that Earthbound Beginnings is... $7. Yeah, it's a $2 upcharge even over the normal price. That doesn't send me good vibes that they're really going to deal with these questions. But yeah, I mean, between, you know, Sony doing all their cross-buy stuff and then Microsoft doing the Rare Replay, it just doesn't... It makes Virtual Console look pretty bad, I feel like.
Yeah.
Any other comments from Sony or Microsoft? If you have anything that they gave you ideas about what Nintendo should do.
Well, let's talk a little about the Microsoft Glass, is it? Or no?
Oh, HoloLens.
HoloLens.
Yeah.
And that was
Smart Glass was 3 years ago. We don't talk about that
anymore. Whatever. I mean, it was a very ambitious thing to show at a press conference. I think we were all talking about that. And although the game they had on display didn't really matter much to me, just pulling that off and the tech there, it's like, this is going to be really cool if they can pull it off with other games. I mean, I don't know where it's going to go exactly or how much it costs to set something like that up. That might be a limiting factor, but, you know, it makes you wonder, well, what is Nintendo going to try to go that route? Do they not have the R&D to do that? Are they not interested in doing that? Or they were already there 15 years ago or whatever, right? Right, Justin?
20
years ago? So,
are you talking about Virtual Boy?
Virtual Boy.
That's what Justin was talking about.
You know, interesting. It's an interesting comparison, actually, because HoloLens, Kudo, I think it was, talked it up today as being, it's actually portable. Mm-hmm. There's no wires. It's self-contained, which means that all the computing for the game that you're running is actually happening in the headset.
Yeah.
Might be streams to it.
Could be. They certainly didn't mention that, but it just, the whole thing made me think, number one, this is going to be way expensive, like way beyond any of the VR stuff, and it's probably a long, long way off. Because I don't see them being able to release that thing at any kind of mainstream price point with any kind of computing power, in the near future. But it looked pretty cool. Like, to me, one of the coolest things was it just gives you a nice display anywhere you go where you could play any game, and to you, it looks huge, and you can just kind of throw it up on. I mean, the size relative to you would be arbitrary, right? So you should be able to use your gestures or whatever, and you could blow that thing up into, like, to make it look like a humongous screen if you want to. Fill up your whole field of view, or you could, like, I guess snap it. Well, you know how Xbox has Snap, where you can, like, put a screen, multiple screens? If you think about it, you could kind of, like, given wherever you are, whatever you're doing, you could kind of make the screen as large as you need it to be and put it over whatever surface or whatever part of your field of view you want, and then have the rest to watch your TV or watch a football game or talk to someone or, whatever. And there's a lot of different ways you can do that when you consider that you no longer need a TV necessarily to play your games. You can just kind of take that with you anywhere. It's a really interesting idea, but it just seems so futuristic and not marketable to me right now.
And I think the one thing that Microsoft did that, like that Oculus press conference last week, I don't know if anyone here watched any of that, but they still don't know how to show off VR games in any kind of, like, you need to literally pick up a VR headset, and that's the only way that you'll understand it.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't effectively done that, whereas Microsoft just effectively demoed HoloLens in a way that, as someone, I've tried a couple VR demos here or there, but I don't really have that much access to that stuff, and when we're out on the show floor, I'm going to hope to try Oculus or Morpheus or whatever, but that's going to be tough because that's not a focus and they're probably going to have long lines. It's great to see Microsoft actually be able to put this in a way that everyone can just watch this press conference and kind of be like, oh, that's what you mean.
Okay, well, let me cut to the chase. Microsoft used the word Metroid today. Do we see Nintendo using the word Metroid tomorrow?
I hope.
Yeah. I think they have to.
They would have to announce at least something, at least like a code name.
You can't let a competitor steal the thunder from your franchise, especially when so many people, it's been so long, there's clearly like a huge interest built up. I mean, if Nintendo was doing an on-stage press conference and they announced a Metroid game, I think people would be like freaking out and cheering the way that they were for Twilight Princess 10 years ago when they first, 11 years ago when they first
showed up. To be fair, that's kind of what happened when they revealed Other M.
There was definitely a bit of that. Definitely. And that was 5 years ago.
Six, actually. Or maybe.
Yeah, it was
that
was six.
E3 2009, yeah. The game came out in 2010, but the game was revealed in 2009.
Okay.
No, I think it was 2010.
Nope, 2009. Played a demo for it in 2010. Yep.
Didn't they reveal
it came out in 2010 because when I was playing that game.
Yeah. I mean, one of my predictions was Metroid will come back, but I think I've done that every year for 3 years.
Right.
And it's, one of these years will be right.
Even a broken clock is right twice a day.
It feels like it's time.
It does. It absolutely does. Yeah. More than ever.
I mean, especially with that sports game that they were showing off in Nintendo World Championships.
It looks so much like
Metroid. Yeah, the interface looks so much like Metroid. And it's like, man, what is going on? Is
you can't tease people with that and then not have something, whether it's something different, whether it's on Wii U, regardless. I mean, you show that and you just immediately think, oh, this looks, I mean, it just, everyone in there is thinking, this looks like Metroid.
Because it even used the lock-on mechanic. Mm-hmm.
They use the lock-on, the health bar in Blast Ball.
The art style,
looks,
the UI, everything.
It looks exactly like Metroid Prime Hunters.
Yeah, so I have high hopes for Metroid showing up in some form. But
yeah.
Man,
and
I would love
if
it was just a blowout.
Nintendo was on the YouTube Live thing for a little bit, and I think it was Ali Rapp from the Treehouse. When Blast Ball came up, it was that very cagey, like, I don't know, there's going to be more about it soon.
Oh, of course,
So we'll probably hear more about whatever Blast Ball is a part of in just a few short hours.
All right, well, one last question before we wrap up here. with everything that we saw today, and also a lot of pretty big announcements out of Ubisoft and EA, from what I could tell. Bethesda last night had a good show. There's been a ton of E3 news now, and you know, for a lot of people, E3 is almost over. You know, like you think about it, like for a lot of people at home who really only care about the announcements or interested in seeing what this stuff looks like, they don't care about the demos at the show. They can't play them anyway, you know. Mm-hmm. And so for a lot of people, I think Nintendo's kind of the last thing. And maybe for a lot of people, Nintendo's the part that they feel like they can ignore, right? Because maybe they're not that interested in it. What can Nintendo do to get some attention for themselves after all the... I mean, today it was probably... Between Sony and Microsoft, I'd say some of the biggest announcements ever at E3. I mean, short of new hardware,
that really. Final Fantasy VII and The Last Guardian revealed, that's absurd.
Yeah, Shenmue 3 is insane. Yeah. I mean, maybe not that many people care, but the people who care so much about that stuff. And FF7 is just gigantic. I mean, Alex Kalafi went to one of those PlayStation experiences or whatever when they show the press conference in a movie theater, which, by the way, is a great idea, and I think Nintendo should steal it right away. But he said when they showed the FF7 remake, people were standing up and standing applause, standing ovation for that in a theater on the East Coast, you know, like thousands of miles away from here. So, you know, people really care about that stuff. And you know, with Nintendo, so far, all we really know from Nintendo about this E3 is what they're not showing. You know, they're not showing Zelda, they're not showing NX, they're not showing the mobile games, they're not talking about this and that. What can they show that might, I don't know if compete is the right word, but
Zelda.
They want people talking about Nintendo at this show.
But that's how you get it, is you show Zelda tomorrow. I think as far as in this grand... This grand E3 battle between Microsoft and Sony and EA and Nintendo and everybody. Like, the way that Nintendo does that is do what they did last year, show Zelda. Because I think if you look at any kind of chart of what was, like, at a E3 2014, what was the biggest deal? It was that damn Zelda.
Yeah, Zelda was probably the number one story last year.
By far.
It could be again if they play it right. Yep. But I don't know what other than Zelda they could really show that people... I don't mean us. I mean people in general would care about as much as the stuff that came out today.
I haven't seen a good Star Wars game announced, or Star Wars games that I care about announced yet, and there's a Star Wars movie coming out. Mm. So if Nintendo was able to get something like a Rogue Leader...
I love it.
That would probably turn some heads.
Yeah, that would be pretty awesome. Especially if they were showing off like a new ship from Episode 7... And that's like the main ship of the game, and they've never shown it before, mm-hmm. you know? And it's like all of a sudden, it's huge for Nintendo, it's huge for video games, and it's huge for Star Wars mm-hmm. fans all of a sudden.
In fact, that would be back out of retirement.
Well, I don't know about that.
But the original Rogue Squadron, they had the Naboo fighter hidden in it.
That's right. Yeah. They kept that a secret
that
for
was
2 years.
Yeah.
It really was incredible that they were able to do that. Star Wars is, bigger than Zelda? Yes, Star Wars is bigger than Zelda. That is, you've won that game. Yeah, if they really do it. Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. But it's going to be tough for Nintendo. Yeah. I think they put themselves in a weird position where they've blocked out a whole bunch of stuff that people really care about. And they've said, we're not going to talk about that stuff. You know, Splatoon's doing well. Mario Kart obviously did well. But Nintendo's not in a great situation right now. They're trying to claw back out of a hole that they've dug themselves into with Wii U. And 3DS is kind of getting long in the tooth. And they're going last. You know, they put themselves in this position where everybody else kind of blows out their, you know, everything they've got. And then Nintendo's left. And if Nintendo comes out with this kind of whimpering... thing, which they've definitely done in the past.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it makes them look really bad. It really does. It kind of makes them seem irrelevant. And they do not, that is not a word that they need to hear right now. So I guess we'll see. There's no point in us, you know, hemming and hawing about it, because we're going to find out by the time pretty much anybody hears this. Or it'll be very close to time. All right, well, I guess we're going to wrap it up. Thanks everybody for listening, and our gang will be back with lots more coverage of E3 2015 all week long.
Yay.
Right here on RFN E3. Podcast Woo-hoo! Subscription feed.